Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody. Before today's episode, I want to tell you about a cool project we've been working on at Preconceived Headquarters for the past year. On September 14th, we'll be launching our first published book called Preconceived, Challenging the Preconceptions in Our Lives. With over 150 guests having joined the podcast, we thought it was time to put some of the incredible stories and thoughts of our guests down on paper. The book is an anthology with over 50 essays, short stories, and thought pieces by former guests on the podcast. Each author was asked to address the greatest preconception related to their area of expertise. If you listen to this podcast, then I think you'll really, really enjoy the book. The entries range from about 500 to 1,000 words and are filled with some really inspirational lessons, stories, and themes regarding a diverse array of topics, just like on the show. It will be ready for order on September 14th through Amazon, available for shipping in both hard copy and for e-reading on Kindle. All profits of the book will be going towards the charitable organization Pencils for Kids. In 2021, 46 children ages 3 to 5 died when fires destroyed their kindergartens that were made of straw. As a result, children of this age are no longer allowed to attend any kindergarten in Niger that's made of straw. To address this strategy and encourage education, Pencils for Kids has launched Project Kindergarten to rebuild many kindergartens out of cement and give the opportunity to thousands of children to continue with their education. 100% of the profits from this book will go towards Project Kindergarten in its pursuit to rebuild kindergartens. So again, the book Preconceived will be available for order on Amazon on September 14th, and we'll keep you posted as the launch date approaches. We really thank you for your support. I think you'll enjoy it. But now for another episode of Preconceived.
You are listening to Preconceived, where we examine the preconceptions that shape how we view the world and the paradigms by which we live our lives.
Hey everybody, I'm Zael Mednick, and welcome to another episode of Preconceived. There are so many adages we are told in regards to love and relationships. Many focus on perfection and certainty, that the partner we are choosing is the right partner. The concept of the one. When you know, you know. If it's right, then there should be no doubt. But is that really the way that love and relationships work? I released an episode last year where I spoke about my own experiences with obsessive compulsive disorder, known as OCD. OCD, often called the doubting disease, is characterized by obsessional thoughts that lead to significant anxiety. The thoughts often center on a need for perfection and certainty. I mentioned as part of that episode that one of the ways that my OCD had expressed itself was in regards to my relationship anxiety.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Concern over the romantic relationships I was in and whether the partner that I was choosing was truly the perfect partner for me. This concept has come to be known as relationship OCD. I am joined today by someone whose work I encountered as I was navigating my own relationship anxiety, Kiyomi LaFleur. Kiyomi is the founder and creator of Awaken Into Love, an online community for people who experience relationship OCD and relationship anxiety. With over 1 million views on YouTube and over 1,000 course and community members, she dedicates her life to raising awareness on relationship OCD, anxiety, and relationships. She herself has experienced debilitating relationship OCD, hypochondria, panic disorder, and general anxiety for years, and used to suffer from every thought, emotion, and feeling possible. Once she overcame relationship OCD, she knew that she needed to be an expert in this field to help others. Kiyomi's background is in social work, yoga therapy, and mindfulness-based work. After years of extensive research, education, therapy, and coaching, she has become an expert on relationship OCD and relationship anxiety.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. So welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So I just talked a little bit about OCD in general, but today we're talking about a subset of OCD, whether you want to call it relationship OCD or relationship anxiety. How do you define this concept to people who aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, I think that the word relationship anxiety and relationship OCD are kind of intertwined or kind of been mixed around a lot recently. But in terms of relationship OCD, it's really when an individual experiences a lot of uncomfortable, unwanted, and intrusive thoughts about their partner. So this has to do with their compatibility, a lot of times about their feelings, like if they feel in love enough. But it's really this preoccupation around, is this partner really right for me? And is this relationship really right for me? But in a way that it becomes very intrusive and invasive, that can actually hinder a person's life. So in a lot of ways, someone can really be debilitated by it. There's really a spectrum of the levels and the degrees of relationship OCD, but it's really at the end of it, having obsessive, compulsive, unwanted thoughts about their partner or their relationship.
I think a lot of people probably can relate to that, saying, I've been in a relationship before, I've dated, and I've kind of gone back and forth. Is this person right for me? Is this something I can live with? Is this an aspect of the partner that I'm okay with? Or does it bother me enough? And they might be saying, yeah, well, what's so different about relationship anxiety or relationship OCD from that, which is part of the normal human experience? How would you explain the difference? And I'll preface that you already said it's a spectrum. So there obviously is a huge range. Same with OCD in general, people who might have obsessive thoughts, but they don't necessarily have debilitating OCD.
Absolutely. I think that the biggest recognition within this is a couple of different ways that we can kind of look about this. One big part is really the OCD cycle. So it's really having the obsessions and then almost trying to mitigate or relieve the obsessions or the unwanted thoughts through going into different compulsions. So if you think about OCD, it's really the obsessions and the compulsions, right? It's kind of that cycle that happens. And a really big part of OCD as well, and our OCD, is really the shame and the guilt that comes with having these obsessive thoughts. There are a lot of people, interestingly, who can have these type of thoughts that are, is my partner right for me? I'm not really sure. These are normal thoughts to have, right? But the really big difference is really that incessant shame that comes about, like, oh my God, I'm having this thought again. What's wrong with me? You know, like really kind of having that sense of debilitation almost with it, or just kind of this sense of guilt that is overrided in a person who has RRCD versus someone who doesn't have RRCD or even relationship anxiety is really like, I have these thoughts, you know, they're kind of annoying. Yeah, you're going to tell me I'm going to leave my partner. Oh, well, I'll figure out what to do with it, right? There's really that difference. In regards to kind of the spectrum aspect that we're talking about, I think that that's why a lot of people like bringing up relationship anxiety, because you can have those doubts. Then you can have the anxiety, which is, you know, this is causing me anxiety. Then you can really have the RRCD, which is very predominant within the cycle, the obsessions, and then the compulsions, relieving that and kind of going back into that loop. That's really the biggest part of the OCD.
And for those not so familiar with OCD, you get an obsession about something. And the easiest example is probably hand washing, is that my hands are dirty. Right. Maybe I logically know they're not dirty, but nonetheless, I have this obsession that my hands are dirty, and that causes anxiety. And then the compulsion is to alleviate the anxiety, which is then washing my hands vigorously. But unfortunately, the cycle of OCD that you're referring to is such that when you engage in that compulsion, it then makes the obsession even stronger to come back.
It becomes an addiction within itself, honestly. Like the brain gets hooked onto that because the brain finds safety in the compulsion. It's like that temporary relief, right? So a person usually has a trigger. So let's say in this case for hand washing that you're talking about, someone's like, oh my God, you know, I have this trigger that I'm not a good person, or there's something on my hands and this could really cause me to be sick. That person will then wash their hands and then feel a sense of relief, like, okay, like I'm good. The brain registers that as, oh, this is what keeps me safe. This is what's actually going to help me. And then it becomes addicted to that cycle. So there's a lot of shame. There's a lot of guilt there, but the trauma is really overriding that as well. And so, yes, it kind of becomes this addictive loop that people go into. And the brain, so innocent, believes that it's just doing the right thing. It doesn't know the difference between keeping us happy and keeping us protected. It's like, well, this is making me feel safe. This is making me feel better, even though it's not in the long term making me better, right? And so that's what the brain does. The brain kind of gets stuck into that. That's why we hear in a lot of cases like OCD stuckness or kind of being hooked. That's another term as well. And that's really part of the OCD cycle as well.
In terms of the relationship, so our OCD, you mentioned that shame can be one of the thoughts that really predominates. What's the shame typically about?
Such a good question. There's so many layers to this. I think a really big part, and on the surface level, is the shame that a person is having doubts, feeling as though they shouldn't have these doubts, feeling as though they shouldn't have these thoughts, and then feeling in some way that they're letting their partner down. Like if I have this thought, that must mean that there's something wrong with me. And also the shame comes a lot with like feelings that a lot of people don't really feel. So the obsessive thoughts really bring a person really into the head, right? Like when you're obsessing, you're always in your head. But what they're really escaping from is the feelings that feel so shameful. So there might be a feeling that comes up that's like terrorizing, that's like fear, or there might be trauma that's triggered. And really it's that disconnection. It's that feeling of like, oh my God, I'm feeling this again. There's something wrong with me. What's wrong with me? Why can't I get it together? I'm hurting my partner. I'm hurting myself. Oh, here I go again. And then that shame really gets looped in, which at the core of it is there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me that's really, really driving that shame.
And maybe a bit of, I imagine for some people, probably, as you alluded to, some guilt that I'm in this relationship, but I'm supposed to not be having these concerns, yeah. But yeah. I'm having them. What do I do with that?
Absolutely. And a really big part of RRCD and relationship anxiety for a lot of people who experience, you know, OCD, the flip side of people who have it is that they're very creative, hypersensitive, empathetic people, usually, not all. But most of the time they are. And what comes with that, the kind of the shadow side or the darkness of having a lot of empathy and having a lot of that sensitivity is hyper-responsibility, right? So hyper-responsibility is really the cognitive distortion around, oh my God, I'm responsible over my partner and their feelings in this relationship. And that's really what brings about the guilt. I'm responsible. They are in it because I'm hurting them, right? That's usually the cognitive distortion. And so that's how the guilt gets heightened. And that's how the shame comes about. It's like, it's just a cycle. It's like this muddy cycle that happens.
Could you give the listeners a sense, either from your own experience, which you've spoken about publicly, or from the people you've worked with, the extent to which this anxiety can take over someone's life? Because I know that it can be extremely pervasive, even just from my own experience. It's the kind of thing that there's some types of anxiety where there's a moment that causes you to be anxious and you can kind of get past that moment. But a relationship, you're living in that relationship 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of this ever-present anxiety, right? That can really be quite extreme.
And I think a really big part of this, which sometimes can be compulsive for some people, but it gives a sense of relief for many, is that it's so intense because it's around something we care so deeply about. If it was about a pencil or if it was about a leaf outside, if we don't really have anxiety about it because it's not, we don't have an emotional attachment to it, right? There's not that emotional bond. In terms of your question, it can be so debilitating for people. And I think that that's the seriousness of it. And just to be kind of honest, there have been people who have been very suicidal over this. We have gotten plenty of emails about people. There was even a comment on YouTube the other day that was like, I was really suicidal until these videos came about. So that's the seriousness of it. I'm sure there have been people who have actually committed suicide around it. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm sure because people have been suicidal. So my point here is that it can be so debilitating. So again, we talked a little bit about the spectrum. You can have the doubts, which are normal. And then you can have the anxiety, which can be very uncomfortable. And then you can have it really being debilitating. I mean, in my scenario, and a lot of people I know too, I couldn't get out of bed. I was throwing up every day. I lost like 20 pounds. I didn't eat. I was just in a constant state of hell and misery. And there are people who are like that as well. Again, not everyone, because I know this can kind of be triggering for people who are like, "Why?" But I'm not in a debilitated state. Everyone is different and everyone's going to react in different ways.
Yeah. And the doubts that you're talking about, the doubts are not abnormal. It's the right way people with this degree of anxiety deal with those doubts and internalize those doubts to cause such anxiety. And like you said, what might distinguish this from a lot of other areas of anxiety is it's the magnitude. And there's a decision ultimately that we feel we have to make at the end, which in reality we often do. Do we want to stay with this person or do we not? And it's considered by society and by many people for good reasons, one of the biggest decisions you make in your life.
Yeah.
Whether we put too much emphasis on that possibly is a problem, but the magnitude of this, you could see how somebody can be so tormented over loving somebody, but being conflicted at the same time and leading to that struggle. When you look at the current paradigm of love and relationships that's in the media and that's in society at large, this idea of the one meant to be, love at first sight, perfection, how do you feel that that plays into not just people with ROCD, but everybody's way that they look at love and how that can eventually lead somebody to becoming obsessed over this issue?
Such a great question. I could go so much into this. I think that it really comes down to a lack of education and information in regards to how people are raised. So most people don't grow up in an environment where their caretakers are mirroring a mature state of love. So when a person grows up and witnesses their parents constantly being in conflict, but also kind of going into trauma responses that are not so functional, that becomes a norm for a child. So really the parents are setting the stage for what is considered quote unquote normal for an individual. And whatever happened in the family is really how the child is going to look about into the world. So if a child really grew up and their parents again were in a lot of conflict, but there was almost that like infatuation after the conflict, like almost that trauma response going back and forth, then a child is going to expect that to be the normal for every type of relationship unless they start to question it, right? So it really starts with the family and it really starts with how the parents are really modeling love or how the caretakers are really modeling love. unfortunately, in society, we have a lot of Hollywood-based romantic films that really focus on the infatuation stage of love, which is typically the beginning stage of love. Not everyone has it, but it's really that honeymoon stage where all of the feel-good chemicals in the body are being released and a person's on a high. And really, scientifically, they have paired these chemicals to feeling like a person is actually on cocaine or on a drug. So it's really intense. We become addicted to that. Hollywood is really mirroring that within their romantic relationship. So take a child who has grown up in kind of a dysfunctional state with their parents, and they're watching a movie that's constantly about infatuation, excitement, and trauma bonding, because it's trauma bonding as well. And they're like, oh, that's how things need to be. That's how a relationship should be. On the flip side, actual functional, quote unquote, healthy, and I put quotes on this because I know that people can kind of go into what's healthy, what's not, what's functional, what's not. That type of relationship is actually a lot more stable and can be boring for a lot of people, especially if they've had trauma within their life, right? I know I'm kind of going into like really deep, like complex stuff, but if a person, again, has experienced that chaos within their family, one, they think that's normal. Two, they see Hollywood movies and that reinforces that that's normal. And three, if they end up going into a secure relationship and their parents didn't model that and they grew up in chaos, then they're going to most likely start having anxiety within their relationship. Why is it so boring? Do I really like this person? Why don't I have those intense feelings of infatuation? Right? So they actually start to question a relationship that's secure because it doesn't feel comfortable. It's not what they grew up with. So Hollywood definitely mimics that. They do a great job with that. I mean, it sells. There's not many movies that are going to be on functional, secure relationships because it would just be you watching people sometimes argue, sometimes sitting next to each other. There's no passion. There's no intensity. There's not that trauma bond or that intense infatuation. It's not going to sell. It's not going to captivate people. So that's a really big part of that in regards to how really we've been raised and then how our external society is really almost reinforcing that or reflecting that.
I think there's a couple ways the Hollywood picture, no pun, that awful pun, the Hollywood picture plays into our notions of love. One is that it's showing you the infatuation part. So yes. It's telling you that is how love should start. So when you're in the beginning phases of a relationship, if you don't feel these sparks, then this isn't a good relationship for me because that's what I'm supposed to feel. When in reality, that's not necessarily the case. Not everybody's wired the same. Chemistry can take time to build and that's okay. And on the other hand, further down the line, like you said, it's not showing you normal life when that infatuation stage does die down. And when you're committing to a long-term relationship and the priorities are a little bit different.
The world doesn't need another podcast about deconstructing. What we do on our podcast is host spaces and conversations where we're talking about what we're leaving behind in our faith, but also where we're going.
Navigating faith honestly can be difficult, but we find that it's easier when you talk to experts and include a good glass of whiskey.
Fair warning, we take deep dives on everything from why we left evangelicalism but stayed Christian,
to how to avoid echo chambers and remain humble, and how to be a Christian in America.
Listen and subscribe to A Pastor and a Philosopher Walk into a Bar.
One of the things in your course that really resonated with me was this notion of not necessarily giving as much credence to my feelings. Mm-hmm. Feelings can be volatile. Feelings go up and down. And I would look at myself and I knew that with my partner, who's now my wife, and frankly, in large part to your course and other therapy that I did that was able to help me get past my OCD, but also my relationship OCD, what it showed me was that sometimes our brains, we have different chemicals in them going on at different times. Feelings go up and down depending on the time of your relationship, depending on the time of day, depending on what else is going on in your life. And this might sound strange to people, but because love is thought of as a feeling, sometimes I think we do ourselves a disservice by only thinking of it as a feeling, where real love should be much more than a feeling, because while feelings are important, they're so fleeting, whereas love should be more stable than that in some sense, right? I don't, you'd explain it better than me. I think
you did so great. No, absolutely. I think that there's a couple different things here. I think that the really big part as to why we also talk a lot about not being so attached to the feelings within ROCD work and within the course is because the feelings are so heightened with ROCD, like taken so seriously. Like a person with relationship OCD and relationship anxiety is constantly checking their feelings, right? When they're checking their feelings, they're actually heightening the feelings. So they're not actually in like a grounded reality, if that makes sense. Like if you're constantly checking for something, you can actually cause a chemical response and actually a bodily response to bring up that feeling, right? Like if I'm checking for feelings of depression, I'm like, is it still there? Okay, is it there? I'm going to bring it up, right? Even if the depression isn't necessarily there. So that's a really also big part as to why we focus so much of it in the course, because a big part of ROCD is the compulsion around the feelings. On the flip side, in regards to awakened states of love or awakened love, yes, it is really about taking an individual to move away from not being so obsessed with having feelings or not, and starting to be okay with the periods that feel boring or feel a little bit uncomfortable or feel just not so heightened in regards to the feelings aspect. It got kind of going back to what I was talking about with the Hollywood and also growing up in, you know, a chaotic environment or whatever parental figure mimicked. There's so much focus on feelings again. And it's not, again, based on the reality of love. The reality of love is that feelings are constantly fleeting, constantly. And if we're making a decision in our relationship based off of feelings alone, then we're going to be breaking up with our partner every second, or maybe every other day, or maybe every week, because sometimes you're going to have feelings where you feel a little bit more grounded. Sometimes you're going to be angry at them. Sometimes you're going to be sad. Sometimes you're going to feel disconnected. Sometimes you're going to feel connected. Like, it's really about almost moving away from an unawakened state or a younger, immature state to a more mature, awakened state, which is, I see my feelings. My feelings don't dictate my life, myself, or my partner, my relationship. They can be messengers for me, showing me different things within myself or give me some information, but they don't have to be the dictation toward me choosing to be in this relationship or not.
For somebody without relationship OCD or relationship anxiety who finds it tough to relate to this, and I'm not saying everybody finds it tough to relate to, but it might be tougher to relate. They might be thinking, but wait, I feel what I should be feeling about my partner. I've never questioned that. If somebody's questioning that, that's a problem. How would you maybe distinguish what they're going through when maybe a thought of doubt comes into their mind? Somebody who doesn't have relationship anxiety, how are they able to process that? Maybe if they're wondering, is this quality a bit annoying for me? Do I want to be with this person forever? Or do I love this person enough? How would they deal with that in contrast to somebody where it escalates to the point of relationship anxiety?
Such a great question. I think that the biggest thing within this is that there is no black or white, right or wrong answer. And it comes really down to every single relationship is so complex and diverse. It's literally like an ecosystem within itself. So in regards to your specific question, I also want to make sure I heard it correctly. When you're saying like a person who just has doubts here and there, how do they know, you know, whether to see if it's an actual issue or not?
I guess I'm thinking of the example of, let's say somebody is thinking, yeah, I've had doubts before, but never to that extent. When a doubt comes in their mind, how are they wired so that that doubt is different and doesn't then lead to this pattern called relationship OCD? Because it might be tempting for people who don't have relationship anxiety to say, well, if you're having relationship anxiety, maybe it's just because there's something wrong with your relationship, because I don't really have those doubts as much. Or when I do have those doubts, they don't cause me the same anxiety.
Yes. Great question. This is like the difference between basically my partner and me, right? So basically asking someone who doesn't have ROCD, but may sometimes have doubts, because that's normal within every relationship, and someone who has ROCD. I find it fascinating that the person who doesn't have ROCD, but may have sometimes have doubts, they're able to be okay with having doubts. I think that's the biggest thing. They can go months and have doubts and be like, oh yeah, I had that doubt. I've been kind of, you know, feeling it, wanted to talk to you about it, but you know, no pressure. And they go about within their life. And I think that that's fascinating and such a beautiful description of really the difference between someone who has a more secure nervous system in relationship work and someone who doesn't have so much of a secure nervous system within relationship work. And a person who has that security, I mean, we can even put it in context to anything. Like if a person has doubt over their career, right? I don't know if you have doubts over your career or you've had doubts within hobbies. Have you ever had that experience before where it didn't become obsessive?
I mean, it's a very low threshold for me to just get doubtful about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Because of OCD that I've had and anxiety.
Yes. But
yeah, I can relate to something that maybe is very low threshold. Like, right. Do I like a hobby where the consequences sure. aren't so much? So I'm debating, should I continue this wood carving course?
Sure.
Yeah, and I go back and forth because it's not really the biggest deal. It's not occupying my time.
Sure. Absolutely. So it's kind of like that. And how settling is that for your nervous system? You're like, okay, I can question it. This doubt is coming up, but you know, it's not really that big of a deal. Right.
Yeah.
So the greatest thing with this though, is that you're in a relationship with another person. So if you have a doubt in something, you also have the ability to communicate with them. Right. So someone who has a more secure nervous system would go, oh, I have some doubts about this within our relationship. So let's say this person who doesn't have RCD has like doubts about their sex life. They maybe want to have more sex with their partner. It would most likely look like, I've been kind of having some doubts. I've been kind of attracted to other people. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, well, I'll see how it goes. They might go a couple weeks, a couple months. Oh, there it's back again. Maybe this is something I should introspect on. Oh, maybe I'll bring this up with my partner. Hey, let's have this conversation. You know, they communicate, they find different mutual agreements with different things. Doesn't necessarily mean that the want would get filled, but there isn't that incessant form of, if I don't get this done, something bad is going to happen, or I'm going to lose my partner, or they're not obsessive and compulsive around just a normal doubt. They understand that life is in the gray. They're okay with it not being filled immediately. And they know that there's an opportunity to talk to their partner about it. I think that that's the biggest piece that a lot of people forget with our OCD and relationship anxiety. Relationships are about creativity. You get to create with your partner. It's not so black or white, right? And you guys get to change together. You guys get to grow together. You can even go to a couples therapy together. You can see what's blocking the both of you. And you can say, hey, I have this doubt. You know, do you think this is something we could play around with and communicate better and have better dialogue? It's not so static. It's not so black and white. I'm sorry. It's not so black and white. So that's the difference, if that makes sense, if I can kind of put it in that way.
I think that's a really excellent framework. And I think that the black and white versus gray analogy is huge in understanding this. It's not that the relationships are necessarily different between somebody who's got tons of relationship anxiety. In fact, often they're not different at all.
Right.
And somebody who doesn't have any relationship anxiety. It might just be that people with OCD, whether it's clinically diagnosed or not, or they're on the spectrum towards relationship OCD, relationship anxiety, it sounds like there's this inability to accept uncertainty and to accept doubt in this search for black and white perfection, which other people might just not be as prone to thinking of.
Absolutely. I think that the other thing I do want to point out, though, is that, you know, we've worked with so many people around the world constantly. And what we do see as a commonality with people who have RCD and relationship anxiety is that they're typically in very secure, beautiful relationships. I think that's a really important part to bring up. Their partner's incredible. Their partner's very usually communicative, very empathetic. There's a willingness to grow. And so we haven't really had any big cases where we've been like, okay, like this person, like this isn't good. Like we haven't had any actually abusive cases or anything like that. We've been pleasantly surprised that all of our clients, even when we've done couples therapy, when Alexis has done couples therapy with them, their partner is really incredible. So I think that that's another piece too, that is highlighted with RCD and relationship anxiety, where it's almost a part of the brain understands that the relationship is very secure and very actually good. And that's why there's so much emphasis on it, because they're terrified of also threatening that.
I can't help but think of myself here and my wife as you talk about that, because I think one of the reasons, without getting too much into my personal life, though my wife said it was okay to chat about this stuff, obviously. Aww. I asked her beforehand. But I think for me, I mean, I was going through significant anxiety, and a lot of it was, how do I know, is this the right person for my life? It's a massive decision. And just the way my OCD wires me, it was bound to cause me tons and tons of anxiety.
Right.
And what made the anxiety even more extreme was I was thinking, she's perfect. I mean,
right, exactly.
She's fantastic. She's so supportive. Right. She's incredible. And on the one hand, it felt like, well, maybe it would be easier if we just ended this relationship because maybe my relationship anxiety would end. On the other hand, I'm thinking she's too good to let the anxiety beat me here. And I think that might be why some of the relationships are so stable, because when you see you have something so good, it's normal that you're going to be fighting those thoughts in your head more that are telling you that there's any doubt about it.
Absolutely. And I think that that's really almost like the blessing side of the relationship OCD, is that it's almost like the relationship itself is mirroring a person to do the work and to heal, right? And a lot of times people can't do that in very dysfunctional relationships. They're not really seeing, you know, the parts that are coming up within themselves. So I would say, yeah, 99% or 99.9% of our clients and our members are in very secure, beautiful relationships.
So Awaken Into Love is the name of your company, which I said I've subscribed to, and it helped me look at relationships in a quote unquote healthier way that helped me. What do you find helps somebody get over that roadblock? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I imagine a lot of people are coming to you and saying, listen, I think I want to be with my partner, but I'm facing these issues of, I don't have that perfect feeling that I've been told by Hollywood I'm supposed to have. We have the occasional argument. We're not in sync on everything, which is totally normal. Nobody is. But at the end of the day, people ultimately feel like they need to get to a certain point where they say, okay, I've come to peace with it and I'm kind of making my decision. I'm going to stay in this relationship and I'm moving forward. What are some of the techniques you've found are most helpful in getting people past that hump where they are able to maybe make a decision?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's usually so much of that back and forth, that one foot in the door, one foot out the door, because it's safer. So really, the reason as to why the brain is doing that so much is because it feels like, okay, if I'm over here, like let's say they're taking a step back because they feel kind of protected within themselves. Taking a step back would be not being in the relationship. Taking a step forward would be in the relationship. The reason as to why people go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth so much is because the brain is really feeling as though it's protecting them from something. So what an individual can start to do, or kind of move into feeling a little bit more like they are going to make the choice, is to start really recognizing first and foremost that they're, one, sick of the back and forth, that the two, the back and forth is not getting them anywhere. It's easy, much easier said than done. And three, really that making a choice ultimately is going to be a lot more freeing than the back and forth, because the back and forth is actually causing a lot more suffering than choosing. It is causing less suffering to choose than to be in that tug of war. It's so painful. I don't know if you can relate. It's so painful to be in the back and forth, right? It's still hard when you just decide to commit, but it becomes a lot easier for the brain, because the brain isn't in such a chaos. It has a little bit more certainty. So you need to give a little bit more certainty to the brain in that way and say, okay, I'm going to make this decision. I've been here back and forth many, many times. I sometimes ask my clients, like, how many times have we had this specific thought before? And they'd be like 5 million times. And I'd be like, have you finally come up with your answer? If they're the one or not? And they're like, no, I've thought about it 5,000 times. So they kind of go back into it and they say, oh, I've been here before. Okay. And there's a part of the brain that just gets sick of it. It's so sick of it. And then that's kind of when they start to take that leap. But it's a titration. It's not like, okay, I'm going to decide and that's it, you know, and then kind of forget everything. It's really kind of that titration that happens.
How burdensome do you find the concept of the one? Because when you think that there can only be one person out there for you, then that the gravity of this decision is almost impossible to grapple with. I mean, it frankly is impossible to grapple with the billions of people in the world. How do you advise people to say, maybe let go of this notion of the one? Maybe you could be fine with multiple people. Maybe there's other people that you'd be fine with, but the reality is you're in a really great relationship right now, except that there's some imperfections. There would be imperfections in any other relationship that you found in those other billions of people in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, the idea of the one is all like a perception, right? Like I can decide to choose my word, choose that my partner is the one I decide to be with. But there's empowerment in the idea of choosing versus there's a one person that's destined for me and I have to find that person. And I think that that idea can be so debilitating for people. I don't necessarily believe in the one. I believe in a person you choose to be the one within your lifetime or whatever you decide. And I think that that can be a very, very empowering decision or perception, because it brings in the sense of choice. I think when we feel as though there's a one out there, we need to find the one, we're kind of like enslaved to something outside of us and we feel more disempowered. And it can be feeling, it can feel really debilitating. Whereas we can go into, oh, there are billions of people out there and we're going to choose our partner and we can be attracted to other people and sometimes have desires for other people and sometimes question if we made a great decision with our partner, right? But if we let go of the idea of the one, it definitely takes a lot of pressure off of people.
And to some people, I think that might sound really unromantic. Yeah. To me, that was one of the most freeing concepts I got from your course. Just this notion that let go of the one, and the idea that is more powerful, even if it's not as sexy, is choice. Because ultimately, what goes into that choice? What goes into that choice is so much more than, obviously the feelings are there, but more than just the feelings. It's about the values. It's about us being compatible. It's about the person.
And I think that if we can move away from another person being the one to how can you be the one, I know that that might sound a little cheesy, but really, how can you be the one that you've been looking for? And how can you be the one for the person you're with? Mm-hmm. Right? Because then that mirrors back into you, a really stable relationship. But there's too much, I feel, influence on constantly chasing outside of herself for completion or happiness that doesn't exist. And we do that very well in romantic relationships.
Looking for a romantic partner to fulfill what we find is missing in ourselves.
That, and I'm going to find a person outside of me that's the one that's going to finally complete me and be the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to finish, we touched on this before, but I know some people in my life who, when I was going through it, who were good friends, who meant well for sure. And I'm not faulting them at all, if you're listening to this, but they would say, no, like I didn't have any doubts in my relationship. Like I was in love. I wake up every day thankful. And I've never had really any of those concerns that you're describing. How do you respond to that? Because I came to realize that for me, I don't think they're lying when they're saying that. I think that they mean that. I think we're just different kinds of people. And I think what helped me a lot is that everybody's different. I'm an anxious person. I'm going to be anxious about this. That's normal. And for someone who's not so anxious, they might not be as anxious about that. And things might seem like this is perfect because that's the way their brain is wired. How important is it for people to realize that we are all built differently, and that's going to impact the way we would be in any relationship? And how important is that to understand for people with relationship OCD, knowing, listen, you keep looking, you're going to be anxious in the next relationship too, because that's just you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that it's imperative and extremely important, number one, to understand mental health. I think that's the biggest thing, because it's not necessarily the doubts that are the problem, right? And it's more so how we're relating to the doubts that are the problem. And that's usually because of mental health. And it's the guilt and the shame and the trauma and all of that that's tied into it. It's extremely, extremely important for us to be cognizant and aware that every single person is different. But once someone understands mental health, the whole world changes. If you talk to someone who really understands mental health, I think that there would be a part within them that's like, you're having doubts, but also seems like you're really anxious about this. That seems kind of normal for having anxiety, right? So if we understand mental health, if we understand anxiety better, if we understand OCD better, depression better, if we lessen the stigma, then I do feel like that will also help people who struggle with mental health, and then people who also don't either, because they can understand other people as well. In the world, as corny as this might sound, will become more peaceful and more harmony. You know, it's imperative for us to understand mental health.
Well, I think that's beautifully well said. Kiyomi, where can people learn more about you and your amazing Awaken Into Love community?
Yeah, you can go to awakenintolove.com. We have a bunch of stuff there. You can start with the free RSD checklist that we have at awakenintolove.com. And there's a bunch of YouTube videos and Instagram. But if this really resonates with you as well, and you're really wanting to take the leap, we do have the RRCD Academy and Community, which is really the level one of the foundational course of really understanding relationship OCD and relationship anxiety. So awakenintolove.com.
And if you're having doubts and it's causing a lot of anxiety in your life, I recommend you go to it. I used it myself and it was very helpful for me. And I'm sure it's been extremely helpful for many other people. And I really commend you and thank you for all the incredible work you've done in building this community and raising awareness to something that often isn't spoken about enough.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a joy.
And thank you everybody for listening to another episode of Preconceived. Have a great day.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.